This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the fun, lost judgment. My own sweet down to the D24. I don't recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. I am your host, Shane Told, and it's so good to have you as I take a journey into the lives of other lead singers. And this guest should need no introduction because he's been here before. Part two, baby. Oh, yeah. With one of my favorites, Garrett Russell of Silent Planet. If you missed the first episode, listen to this first. Then after you've listened to this, go back and check it out because it was a treat before. It's a treat again. He is terrific. And, you know, I always say one of my favorite things about doing these podcasts is how many new friends I've made. You know, a lot of these people I talk to, I don't know them before. You know, I just cold call them on the phone and, you know, we hash out their life story practically. And Garrett was one of those guys. I didn't know that much about Silent Planet. I certainly didn't know much about Garrett himself. Now we've become great friends. Over the last year and a half, we've kept in touch. We spent the entire Warped Tour together this summer. And now I'm very proud to call him a good friend and so glad to have him back on the show. Before we get into that, of course, I want you guys to know you can always get in touch with me if you have anything to say, if you have suggestions for upcoming guests for the show, any creative criticism, you want to tell me I'm doing a great job, a horrible job, whatever you want to do, hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Also, check us out on all the social medias. We're on Instagram, Twitter. We have a very infrequently updated Facebook page. But I do check all that stuff. And I read all my messages and everything on there. I'm not the best at getting back to you, but please send me a message. I definitely will read it. For the record, this podcast will always be free week after week. Don't worry about that. It won't cost you a dime ever. Putting up the show every week is the highlight of my week. I love this so much. However, there are costs, you know, associated with getting this up for you guys every week and doing all this stuff. I do pretty much all of it myself. So if you want to help out the show, the best way to do it is to join the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. The best thing about the All Access Club is you get more episodes of this show. We do a monthly bonus episode. Certain tiers get 2 monthly bonus episodes. We have interaction with me on a Facebook group. We have interaction with other fans of the show. And believe me, so many great friendships have been made. Shout out to all my sinners worldwide. Also, Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise getting shipped to your house every 3 months. There's a web store exclusive only if you're members of the club. We run contests on there. I also do a monthly Q&A session where I answer your questions. I play some tunes. It really is a good time, and it's as little as $6 a month to join. And that is really what helps this show, you know, keep going week after week, enabling me to do it, us to get so many great guests like this week, like last week, like the week before. I really feel like we're on a great run right now, and I'm just so excited for this thing. So if you could spare a couple bucks, I know it's the holiday season. I know, you know, money isn't growing on trees, but if you can just throw 6, 9, 25, whatever bucks my way, it really, really does go a long way in keeping this thing going week after week. The link for that is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Again, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Check it out. Also, shout out to our new sponsor, rockabilia.com. That is rockabilia.com. They are the best in the business. I'm so happy that they're supporting our show. They have over 500,000 unique items over there on their merch store and so much stuff that you just don't see everywhere. You know, not the typical stuff you see at Hot Topic or you see someone wearing around the mall. They have really, really good stuff. Also, everything they have over there is officially licensed, so all the money goes right back to the bands. I love it. You should love it, too. So check it out. They've always got great deals going on over there. Again, that link, rockabilia.com. All right, let's jump in. Here's my conversation with the one and only Garrett Russell of Silent Planet.
I say down! The pride of delusion! It's fast, it's bad, it's why my advances have been me your fragile mind. You will learn how to fracture! Spell!
Shane, how you doing?
Good, dude. I was just about to call you. You beat me to the punch.
Dude, perfect.
But we're already recording. I literally hit record, and I was like, all right, I'm going to call my buddy Garrett. And then, boom, there you are. It's like some telepathy shit, man.
So this is the uncensored, unfiltered version. What?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, there's no, you know what? For the kids listening... Look, listen to this. Listen to what this is. Cracked a beer. There you go.
I'm getting cracking open a cold one. I'm eating pizza because this is my last day in America for the next like 4 weeks. So I'm gonna enjoy a good pizza.
Yeah.
And I've also got tacos. I kid you not. I asked myself, what are the two things that I really want before leaving this nation?
Yes.
And I wanted good pizza, and I wanted authentic tacos.
Well,
so
those are two things that are very hard to come by in Europe. I mean, pizza's really tough. Like,
it really is. I mean,
I don't know how you fuck up pizza, to be honest with you.
Oh, but they find a way.
And tacos, like, don't even bother for the most part. I mean,
have you seen it? I haven't even seen a taco. Like, I haven't even seen the like a food shaped in that. I mean, the closest thing you'll find, obviously, is the Euro, you know.
Well, they have like burrito shops and stuff. They have, you know, like the Chipotle style, you know. That's happening in Europe now. But they're never very good, you know. They always find a way to do something to just totally lose the essence of what makes, you know, Mexican food great. But you can say that about other parts of America too that aren't California.
Oh yeah, no. I've had some truly like atrocious, not even Mexican food in other parts of this nation that I live in. But yeah. It's one of those weird things where when you grow up in California, I feel like it's kind of like how Americans are with Europe. Like if you ask an American like where Belgium is, it's very unlikely that they will point anywhere near the direction of where Belgium is. And I feel like as Californians, we're even worse. Like. Because you would ask them, like, where Vermont is, and they would be like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, you know, somewhere over there. So I feel like, you know, I'm like, I try not to be like a California elitist, but then I get home from tour, and if it's the summer, it was really humid, or if it's the winter, it was really snowy. And it's hard to not feel like your state is maybe sometimes slightly superior, to be honest.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, though, like as a guy that's traveled to all over the world, I've probably been like 50 countries or something like that. I would say California probably is my favorite place and probably the place that I feel most comfortable, which is weird because I'm not from California, but there's just something about it. The weather, the vibe, it's open, it's clean, it's new, you know, like for the most part, it's pretty safe, you know. So I get why a Californian would feel like that even more so than I do. I'm from Canada. It doesn't make sense, but for some reason, California really does have that vibe to it.
Well, you know, it's funny you said you feel comfortable in California because your set was the last show of this Warped Tour that we were both on, same stage and all.
Yeah.
Opposite sides, but same. Mutant, as they said, the energy soda of
super mutant. Soda, mutant super soda, energy stage by Monster. They like,
yeah, if you're listening to this, just know that the only way that Shane's able to hit those notes is he chugs a gallon of it before he gets on stage. That's a fact. You can take that to the bank.
Well, go ahead.
Well, sorry, but yeah, I was just saying, sorry. So the last show was a home show for us. But your crowd was bigger than anyone's. Like it was because you played right before us, and luckily because it was a home show. Unlike some of the days where it's like Silverstein plays before Silent Planet, And it's like the walkout is so much that we feel like embarrassed. You know, like our crowd was probably, you know, was around your size because, but and you had this huge crowd and you were playing during Knocked Loose, who was, you know, the most like probably hyped up band of the whole fest. And I don't know if you knew that, but you were playing during Knocked Loose because I was like watching it. And they had a huge crowd too because Californians like, you know, loves just a good hardcore band. But yeah, your crowd was nuts. It was really, really cool. And I remember you got on stage and you said like, you know, our first sold out show was here, I think, right?
Yeah, we've just always done well in California. I don't know what it is. We just always have. I mean, I think like most bands do well in California. It's rare that someone's like, oh God, Southern California, get me out of here. The shows suck. Like no one's ever said that, you know? And again, you say it's like it was Pomona and it was the only, you know, well, other than San Diego, the only Southern California date of Warped Tour. Yeah. And there was a lot of people there. So, I mean, we did it. It was definitely our best one. And we've just always done well there. And I'm not really sure exactly why. But, you know, we just kept coming back. And every time we were there, we were excited and in a good mood. And the show went well. And every time we came back, more and more people came. You know, and like,
yeah, just you know, next year, had a good energy and you just kind of kept it going.
Yeah, and next year we're playing at the, you know, the new House of Blues headlining there in Anaheim, which is like,
oh, the new one.
Yeah.
But it's still like downtown Disney, right?
It isn't exactly. It's kind of around the corner. Like it isn't.
Okay.
I don't think it's affiliated with Disneyland at all anymore. But
okay.
It's very close. Like it's right at, you know, almost the same. Like it's like one block over.
Yeah.
I did a solo show there in the small room. So they gave me a little tour. I mean, it's beautiful. I don't know if you've been there yet, but it's huge. The stage is huge, but like, it's very well thought out, you know, because they built it just for to be a House of Blues. Like, it isn't.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so
it's probably
really,
a little
really
bit
good.
Bigger. Because I remember the Downtown Disney one was probably a bit smaller than maybe the average House of Blues.
Yeah, probably a little bit. No, this one is bigger. Definitely, I'm not sure what the capacity is, but it's considerably bigger. Like, it's probably like 50% bigger or something like that.
Dude, they used to do these free shows for local bands there at the House of Blues on like Sunday nights. My buddy Ben with Pirate was his production group, and they would get to like throw shows. And so it was cool because, you know, when you're a local band, everyone's always trying to get you to pre-sale tickets and stuff. No joke. I'm next to, I'm at Absolute Merch right now. You know, I know you know those guys.
Yeah.
And Noah was one of he's right over here in the warehouse.
And oh, you're there right now. Who, oh, cool. Yeah, tell Noah
right
I said what's up.
He says what's up. And he's one of those guys who is just Noah and Athena. Athena's from Australia. So
yeah, I know Athena too.
A hard time. Okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, you know her. Yeah, so she's we always give her a hard time about being from the prison colony. but it was just funny because I'm dying to go to Australia on tour, and we're trying to work on that. And obviously, you guys are there often killing it. But so we used to always play these Sunday night House of Blues shows, and we didn't have to pre-sale, and it was so crazy getting to like play on a stage that big. And like people would come out because like the drinks were like cheaper and the show was free. And anyways, that's like that'll always be a pretty huge memory for us. So good spot.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool that they do that. And I'm a little actually kind of surprised, but
yeah, I am too. I think it's just maybe they were having slow Sundays, you know, and like people weren't booking them. So it was probably like a summer thing.
Also, yeah. You know, another thing that they do at House of Blues on Sundays is the gospel brunch, right? And I remember a couple times we've played House of Blues on Sundays and various, maybe not Anaheim, but other ones. And it's always a pain in the ass because they have the brunch and you can't load in until it's done, you know, and you have to wait. So maybe it had something to do with that. If they had that,
that's true. Yeah, other like agents were like, "I'm not letting my band deal with your stupid brunch." So they're cool. We'll throw local bands on it. So
yeah,
lo and behold, Silent Planet. We got to feel like rock stars.
Yeah. No, it's funny. And you talked about Warped Tour. I know.
Yes.
You know, you guys did it. Well, this past summer that just happened, and you guys did it the year before. And it was a big jump for you guys, basically going up to, you know, the monster stage, which is pretty much the main stage. How was that for you guys transitioning, you know, just, you know, your second record comes out and, you know, here you are, you know, one of the, you know, at least average, if not bigger than average bands on the tour.
Yeah, it was a really crazy experience getting to play next to these bands that, you know, I knew of and, you know, would dream of touring with when I was starting the band back in like 2009. And, you know, it's like the Acacia Strains up there and Stick to Your Guns, who I was listening to, you know, back in high school, like in 07.
Yeah.
Was playing. And obviously you guys have been listening to you since before, at least, yeah, discovering the Waterfront. So just so many bands. It's just like, you know, it was really wild to be up there and kind of, I guess, part of some of the new wave of bands. You know, I guess there's like Silar and Too Close to Touch and some other younger bands. I mean, and then we were all able to like be on the same stage as Gwar, which was crazy for every yeah. band, and as well as Candiria, who was probably the most unknown and most talented band on that tour this year.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's a band most people had never heard of. Even guys mm-hmm. in my band hadn't heard of them. I was surprised because I remember them from when I was in high school. And
yeah.
You're absolutely right. They were, and they... Yeah, they were definitely one of the bands that were, you know, there weren't a lot of people watching them every day, which you know, it can happen on Warped Tour, and it's kind of a shame.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, and I think they were such cool guys. They were very humble about it, and just like, yeah. I mean, this is a band that took, I believe, like Lamb of God on their first tour or something, and just
I
like,
believe it, yeah.
You know, they are like, if you're going to understand how metalcore came to be, and especially the more intelligent flavors of metalcore, like that's kind of the band to be looking at, you know. So
I agree 100%.
Pretty crazy.
I mean, and let's not forget Hatebreed. I mean, Hatebreed,
oh of course,
and yeah. your Hatebreed ripoff shirt was really funny. Talk about that. because I saw it and I was like, oh, I hope, like, I they're just taking the piss, like I know that, but I don't know if I'm sure you didn't ask Hatebreed, but I guess you were tight enough with Hatebreed to do that, knowing you know, no one was going to get like pissed at you.
Yeah, it was really, really last minute. Like, I don't fully remember how it happened. I know that, you know, they had a shirt for every Warped Tour, and it's really cool. It always said, "I survived the Hatebreed mosh pit in fill in the blank city,"
yeah,
and then it
would
have like
here,
a little
yeah.
icon.
Yeah.
You know, so for Milwaukee, it was a mill, and you know, just like different cities had different little icons. And so I think I was just thinking about, oh, I wonder what they're going to do for California. And it was like, well, the last day of the tour was also our home show, and we often like to do exclusive merch, especially yeah. for home shows.
Yeah.
And so we thought, like, oh, well, we'll just make a small run of these. And we were stoked because a few of the different dudes from Hatebreed actually, like, grabbed the shirt, and then they, like, they retweeted the shirt and stuff. So that's when we were kind of holding our breath. We're like, we really don't want to seem like we're, like, you know, trying to mess with these legends. We just wanted to, because it was kind of making fun of ourselves, because it said, "I cried, you know, in the Silent Planet
yeah,
mosh pit."
Totally.
And it was just kind of the joke of, you know, we are definitely not the heaviest or the scariest or the most credible band, you know, and it's kind of this joke among our listeners that there's a better chance that you'll, like, cry because, like, of some emotional heartstring that was strung, more so than, like, you know, you got hit in the face and you need to go to the hospital. So, you know, that was definitely, it was kind of just poking fun at ourselves. But yeah, that was, I'm stoked you saw that. I wasn't even sure how many people saw it.
Yeah, no, it's actually what happened was I was doing a podcast, recording it with Jamie Josta, you know,
oh, okay.
singer of Hatebreed. We're
yeah,
outside.
Yeah.
We did it early in the morning because Josta's a busy guy. I'm a pretty busy guy, but Josta's a really busy guy. So we found like time. I want to say we did it at like 10 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And we were out behind his trailer, and somebody came walking by with the shirt on, and he hadn't seen it yet, I think. And we were in the middle of recording, and and he's like, "Oh," but he, like, I could tell he thought it was cool, and not, he wasn't like, you know, he didn't care. And you guys are on the same stage, so I figured by the time you spend a whole summer, you know, with somebody, it's like it doesn't even matter where you come from or what your beliefs are or how old you are. Everyone just seems to come together on Warped Tour on the same stage, and you guys,
oh, yeah.
you know, becoming buddies with Hatebreed. We became huge friends, like great friends with Gwar.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, you know, he came up and killed one of your band members
yeah,
on
yeah,
stage
he killed,
and then started to shred.
Exactly, and then just 2 weeks ago I had Blothar the Berserker on this show. We had a great talk, and then I went to see Gwar in Toronto. You know, and they hooked up the VIP. The people at the door said I was the only person that had like a backstage pass. Just me.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's cool how you make very unexpected friends, because when I was like, you know, in high school and, you know, I never saw Gwar in high school or anything like that, but I knew who they were, certainly.
Totally.
I would have never thought I would be friends with them like that, you know? So
totally.
Music can really bring, you know, odd friendships together, but I think that's also something to be said for the Warped Tour, too.
You know, it's funny how you said about, you know, knowing about Gwar, because I found out about Gwar listening to a podcast or an interview, probably not so different than this, with Jeremy from The Devil Wears Prada. And they asked him about, it was either a fest, I don't know if it was Warped Tour, but it was some fest, and he's talking about like hanging out with the Gwar guys and how that was like a childhood dream. And so I was the younger kid who, and I like was listening to The Devil Wears Prada. And so I was like, oh, like who is this band that's like legendary? Then I looked them up and my mind was obviously blown and saw, you know, Alien Sperm and everything. And it was just right. Wild.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. One of a kind band. But yeah, you guys just, speaking of The Devil Wears Prada, and Jeremy's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
You guys were just out with them.
We were.
And that's, you know, a big tour. You guys have decent billing on that. How was that for you guys? And I mean, how does it feel when you play with a band that, you know, you kind of looked up to and listened to when you were younger?
Oh, man. You know, it's like two of the four of us definitely had followed the band a lot, you know. And the other guys like them too. But I think Thomas and myself, both of us that do like vocals in the band, had followed them for such a long time. And then it was funny to get on tour with them. And then the joke started to be how similar we looked, because I guess Mike and I have similar colored hair. And we're just kind of like, you know, weird nerd guys. And then like, Jeremy and Thomas, our bassist, on stage, like when the lights are behind them and you just kind of see the silhouette, they honestly look identical, like completely identical. Right. I don't know if you've thought about that, but really, really funny. To like watch, because people were mistaking them the whole tour, you know, people like, oh, hey, Jeremy, you know, and Thomas just starts to kind of go with it. But it was really this funny thing to, you know, be on this tour with this band that we'd been following for so long. And kind of picking up wisdom from them. And they're really, really hospitable to us. I mean, it's cool because we've never toured with a band, like a headliners who were dicks, to be honest. Like you hear about those horror stories.
Yeah.
Like the whole time you're just treated like you're completely lucky to even be in the same venue as a band. But that's never happened.
Who are you
going to
out? Who are you outing now? it's right. Everyone's getting outed. Who are you going to out, right?
Oh, trust me. That's funny. Jesus. It's like if I ever toured with a band that was like super uncool, like I would totally just say like, hey, those guys are uncool. Of course, I'm definitely not inclined to be like, oh, I heard these guys weren't cool. Cause you know, it's the how stuff comes from the grapevine. It's oftentimes you can't trust it, but
and oftentimes it's wrong. I've toured with bands and met people I've heard things about. And I've been on tour with them for months and months and been like, what the hell is that guy talking about? You know?
Oh, totally. It's funny. You know, I've seen a lot of forms of like, hey, you know, name band guy, like the nicest. I literally saw a form, I kid you not, on Facebook, and I don't know how I think I came across it because someone tagged me in it, and I think I was on the nice side, but they were like, hey, like who's the nicest and who's the meanest person you've ever met? And you know, people were just like, oh, you know, this guy was really cool, but this guy, he wouldn't sign my thing. And you know, I think most folks have the maturity to think that you never, it's always possible that you meet someone in their worst moment. I think most folks are aware of that, especially people who have, you know, lived life long enough to have really good days and really bad days. But sometimes you do meet people who are like, oh, I met this guy from this band and like, he wouldn't give me the time of day. And I was reading this form thinking like, yeah, some of these people are really good people. And it's really a shame that you're kind of slandering them right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I read, it's funny though, that happened to me once. I was reading some message board or something, and someone had wrote a little story about me and how I was an asshole to them. And you know what's funny?
Oh, wow.
You know what's funny? It was true. And it was one of like a handful of times that I was something, you know, I had like bad day, whatever. And I remembered it. I remembered that whole situation, what happened, what I did, feeling like was a misunderstanding and like feeling bad about it when I left. And sure enough, like years, years later, this is like 6 or 7 years later, I read this and was like, I was a dick. That's like, and I was like, fuck, like I was probably a dick to a fan like 3 times ever, you know, and that was one of them. And there it is. So, you know, it really goes to show you, you know, like what's the Hell's Angels motto? When we do bad, everyone remembers. When we do good, everyone forgets, you know, or whatever it is.
That is a very cynical model, but, you know.
Well, hey, it's the Hell's Angels, but, you know, so it's, you know, but
did,
it
did
is.
Did you write that guy? Did you say, hey, you know, it's me, like, I remember what you're talking about, or did you just kind of
I did. This is so long ago now. I can't remember if it was Facebook or how I did, or if I just wrote a reply, but I did write something. And, you know, just say, like, hey, I remember that, and, like, I'm sorry, and I, you know, you kind of caught me on a bad day. And that does happen. To me, it's rare, but I know I'm a pretty even-keeled guy, and I don't have, a lot of highs and lows. You know, I know you suffer from, you know, some...
bipolar.
Bipolar, right? So there must be times when you're just, like, in no way, shape, or form in a position to be able to, you know, have that, you know, give that fan that experience that they might want. But I'll tell you, every time, everything I've had to deal with you, you've always been just the biggest sweetheart, so.
Well, I appreciate that. And it's funny. I mean, your ability to look at someone on the internet, you know, slandering you for the masses, you know, and then still be able to, like, say you're sorry. I feel like that person would have to want to hate you to think you're a bad person at that point. Because I think the gut reaction would be like, screw you. You have no idea what it's like to tour. You know, to kind of more like defend your own.
No, but experience. not for me, because I felt like when it happened, and, you know, and then the person was kind of gone, and I was like, ah, shit, like, I shouldn't have, you know what I mean? I realized, like, it was a bit of a misunderstanding as well, but but I, you know, I wish that I had, so I, you know, right when that came back, and I hadn't thought about it in years and years and years, but right when it came back, I thought about it, and I said to myself, well, there's a couple things, you know, moving parts here. The first is this person that I, like, want to make amends with, because I just don't want them to think I'm a prick. Second is all the other people that are reading this. And third is all the people that person has told over the years about me, which is probably a few. You know what I mean?
If they're voluntarily just hopping up on Facebook and, you know, giving people a spark notes of you being mean, like, they probably like that story, unfortunately. Yeah.
But have you had any run-ins with anyone else in any bands? Like you said that, I mean, there's been times in you know, my career opening for bands where we haven't been treated the best, but anyone that really rubbed you the wrong way?
You know, not that I've experienced as, like, a whole band thing. I've definitely met, I think it's more common for me to meet folks in the music industry. You know, I started managing a couple bands. I guess I'll give them a plug, a band called Dayseeker. Really incredible band from Orange County.
Shout out to Rory.
Comrades. Yep, shout out to Rory. Yeah, and a band called Comrades. They're like a three-piece family band. Husband, wife, they've been touring, like, nonstop since 2008. Incredible, kind of like Fall of Troy vibe. Vocals are quite a bit different than Fall of Troy, but awesome band. And so, like, I've kind of started to, you know, try my hand at the music industry thing a little bit, you know. And I've met my share of folks through that who I think will only kind of have the time of day for someone who they think, you know, is really going to affect them in any, like, capacity that's going to be, you know, like, relevant. And so I've had more of run-ins than, honestly, not with band guys, but with kind of industry folks who just don't really have the time of day. Cause you're just, like, clearly, like, a band dude. And I think also some people might feel kind of annoyed with band guys. Like, hey, why are you trying to step into our realm here?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's an interesting thing to bring up. Yeah. But I would argue that almost every manager, I mean, a lot of managers, and they're usually older guys that were in a band at some point, and then they're, you know,
true,
then they moved on
them,
into management. A lot of them,
Yeah, no, that's very true. I mean, a lot of times, it's like they were the really smart guys in their band, you know, like, were more or less managing their band to some capacity, and then kind of applied what they learned there into other realms. And it's possible that you get jaded. Once you're a manager, probably who holds all the cards, you probably get solicited for so many favors that it's hard to just believe that someone, like, genuinely is, like, trying to talk. So maybe that could be a difficult part of that. But yeah, it's, you know, all in all, the industry is pretty humble. You know, like Kevin Lyman, who runs Warped, tour and has done so for so long. I had a meeting with him and he had me over to his house and all of a sudden was like cooking us food and yeah. was like, you know, giving me the whole tour and the rundown and advice. And it was just like, you know, on a level of like genuine and
Kevin's
humble that
Kevin's incredible.
You rarely see.
Kevin yeah. is incredible. And he's been on the show. He's one of the only people that's not a lead singer to be on the show, by the way. and I have utmost respect for Kevin. And, you know, I've always been like, he's an interesting guy because he's very, like he always wants to give people second chances, sometimes to a fault. And he wants to help out everyone he can. And he really genuinely does, but he's not like a schmoozer really. Like, you know,
no,
he's kind of like,
point.
He's kind of quiet. Like I forget who it was at Warped Tour that I was talking to you. This is years ago. One of the girls that used to do publicity. And she said something to me like, yeah, I've worked for Kevin Lyman for 3 years. And like, we've probably had like maybe 10 conversations, you know? And the rest of the time it's just, she's just been like, yeah. So like, I'm thinking this, and he'd be like, yep, cool. That sounds good. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And he really like believes and trusts in the people that he hires and he trusts in the bands that come out and he's, you know, he really is amazing. But the fact that, you know, he had you over and cooked you food and everything, I totally believe that because he really is that way.
Oh yeah, completely. And it's really, you know, for someone who holds, you know, more cards than maybe anyone in the genre, because obviously like if you're in a business sense talking about bands who play like the genre of music we play, a lot of people just call it Warped Tour world, you know, or Warped Tour music, because it's like the most concise way to say like, oh yeah, like these bands play Warped Tour and that's where they succeed. And like Warped Tour became the circuit by which like the genre kind of had like definable boundaries almost, you know. And obviously he kept that pretty open because Eminem's been on it and Katy Perry's been on it.
Well, the smartest thing he ever did was not pigeonhole it into a punk rock tour because you know, that, you know, and I know, you know, it well, growing up in California, you know, this Southern California skate punk, you know, No Effects, Bad Religion stuff, it's gone in waves of popularity. And there's no way the tour would be running, you know, coming into its 24th year if he'd continually, you know, just put bands on Epitaph and Fat Records on the tour. So, you know, him branching out to other kinds of music was very smart. And, of course, people will argue that they always had hip-hop and they always had, you know, bands like Helmet and stuff like that. But, you know, him going into metalcore, having all that style of music on the tour and now it's so prevalent – was very, very smart of him, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, especially the slightly heavier music, whether it's, you know, Silverstein that has, like, a lot of active rock influences all the way to the Acacia Strain, you know, playing, like, insanely heavy, dark stuff that's, like, really awesome and people are, like, moshing like crazy. Like, those, all of those bands have been given such a platform through that tour, you know?
You're
and,
right.
It's anyways, I guess to sum up where we're going with that, like really humble dude and definitely showed me that, you know, on any level, like you really can't judge someone based on where they're at as far as how they're going to treat you, because Kevin was the most humble and the most like willing to give advice and to just be patient with me as I'm like trying to formulate ideas as a manager of like almost anyone in the industry. And like, he obviously could have just been like, you know, get out.
Well, Kevin
so,
sees value.
It's cool to know that.
Kevin sees value in people. And, you know, he's a guy that's, like I said about him changing the style of music on the tour. He's a guy that understands that, you know, young people know things that he might not know. And he's a listener. He's a quiet guy. People don't understand that Kevin Lyman, if he's in a room with a bunch of people, he's not taking over conversations.
Nope.
You know, he'll sit back and listen. But, you know, with you and you know, getting into the business side of things, I found that a little interesting because, you know, when we spoke like a year and a half ago, you know, I know that you were, you know, you kind of run the ship in Silent Planet, but you're also a guy that's, you know, a scholar. You know, you read a lot of books, you're artistic in that way. And typically that kind of personality isn't the kind of person that's like business minded. And, you know, I know you're like super on top of,
your merch and your, you know, not just design artistic wise, but like the numbers and the raw data. But that's kind of rare because, you know, you seem to have equal parts left brain and kind of the mathematical side to you. And now, I mean, you're taking that into music management, which is a great skill, but something, you know, a guy that's quoting like, you know, ancient literature, you wouldn't put those kind of things together.
I think, you know, I think that comes from, and that's very kind of you to say, and I think that whatever side of, I guess, you know, left brain, right brain switching I have going on inside of my sometimes imbalanced brain is probably possible because, you know, there's this, I hope I didn't say this in the last interview and I'm not going to get redundant.
It's okay.
But,
it's been long enough. I don't know. Yeah. Go. Okay, everybody. Go back and listen to the first one and then come resume here.
There's this book, I'm probably going to blank on the name. I haven't read it in years, but this guy proposed that humans, instead of being called Homo sapiens, which means thinking beings or wise beings, he said, what if you called them Homo liturgus? And what he said it basically would mean is... we are loving beings and we are like practicing beings. And, you know, that's where we get the word liturgy from. But what he was kind of getting at is that like, we're so defined by what we love and who we love and how we love. And like, this is the problem with Homo sapiens is to say, okay, well, so somebody with maybe a diminished intellectual capacity, are they less of a human? You know, 'cause if we're thinking beings or we're wise beings,
right.
if someone's intellectually, you know, diminished, are they less of humans? And hopefully, unless if you're Nazi, you say no to that. You know, because I don't think that someone's, you know, less of a person because they're not, you know, they were born and dealt a different hand. And so he said, like, what if we defined people? And of course, Marx defined people by homo faber. He said, we are the work of our hands. And that's where, you know, the Communist Manifesto came from, because right. He said, like, in the capitalist societies, people are being alienated from their work. Like, sure, people are getting paid well by the Henry Ford, but like, is it really fulfilling to just put it like just to be the guy who puts the tire on, you know, on the car? Yeah. Or like, are we meant to like aspire to create something like autonomous? And so that was that always kind of had my attention. But there's a lot of obvious problems with communism. I'm definitely not
sure.
If you're listening to this, I'm not saying hey communism, but I always thought that was an interesting. I've always thought Marx had a lot to say just as a philosopher of human nature. So many people obviously get caught up in his political philosophy, but as if you look at him as a philosopher of human nature, and so that kind of had my attention. And then I read this guy, a spiritual guy, and he was saying that we are who we love and how we love, and so that's why I started calling our audience lovers instead of, I guess, like fans or like, you know, planeteers. That would be kind of fun. But, I, you know, call them lovers, because I think like, one, I want to be someone who like loves these people and doesn't just like see them as a target audience to buy our album. And second, like, besides wanting to develop a relationship, I want people to see themselves in that light, that like they're defined by how they love and what they love. And so this is a long winded way of saying, I think I got into the numbers because I loved Silent Planet so much. And I loved, like, I believed in what we were doing as a band, and I had to do it because no, I don't think anyone else was going to do it. And so I started figuring out merch. And so it's like, okay, well, how do I figure out merch? I look at the bands who are good at merch, Being as an Ocean, Hundreds, like those bands just like were like blowing my mind with what they would do with merch. Or you look outside of the genre too, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, well, you know, you just kind of start to like really, you know, look at people who are good at that, because I wasn't good at that. And I just kind of had to develop that sort of business brain. And now that I've started it, it just didn't turn off. And so right. I'm a pretty big believer that young people should challenge themselves and try things that they don't like at first.
Right.
Because especially while your brain is still growing, there's still a chance for you to become someone who loves that. And to really expand, I think, your personhood, because you expand your interests and your passions, you know. And so I was actually talking to a 19-year-old man on our tour in Houston, and he's a good friend of mine. And he was telling me, you know, I just kind of feel stuck in these different ways, and I'm serving, and I just don't know if I can go to college. And I'm just like, I know this sounds reckless, but I think you like, what are you passionate about? Because you're 19, like your brain is growing. So like, you should really feed it right now. because eventually you'll be the age that we are right here. And you know, our brains are done. You know, the plasticity is much less. And, you know, we're kind of locked in with our crappy selves at this point.
Well, yeah. So,
yeah. But yeah, anyway, sorry, long-winded answer. But we're lovers, and because I love something, it made me love other things. Kind of like the dad who, like, you know, learns how to be a ballerina because that's what his daughter wants to do, you know.
Right.
I guess that was kind of me with business. I loved the band, and I believed in it, so I had to start caring about business stuff because very few bands are ever just handed immediate success, and I know that you know that more than anyone. So,
well, yeah, of course. It's interesting. I don't know, like the That's an interesting, like, sort of almost, I don't want to say conflicting ideas because that's the wrong way to phrase it, but you're taking these people that you love, you actually literally love them, and they are the reason that you're able to do what you do by them supporting you.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're running the numbers and figuring out how you can extract as much money possible from them.
Do you know what I mean?
I'm playing devil's advocate. I don't really mean that you do that. You're analyzing numbers. How can I get every penny? Like, that's obviously not your approach, but it is sort of. I mean, you want to understand how you can. This is a band that didn't have a bus on Warped Tour, or you were in a van on Warped Tour. So you're obviously very. You know, you're almost giving back to the fans in that way because you can, hey, we'll cut our shirts down a few bucks, but we're going to ride in a van. So you make sacrifices. So I absolutely understand those sacrifices, but at the same time, it's never going to be perfect, you know?
No, it won't. And it's funny, you know, it's funny because I obviously just mentioned the intellectual founder of communism. And what I'm about to say is all very capitalist, but my dad used to always say to me, you know, like he's definitely on the more right wing as far as economically goes. He's a libertarian. Right. And my dad used to say to me, he's like, you know, the problem with a lot of people see the market as something finite, that like, you know, that wealth, there's a certain amount of wealth and of course, like there's in the current moment, there's a certain amount of wealth because we're finite beings on a planet. And so to a degree, it's going to be finite. But he would say, like, you know, we can, like, as humans, we can all, like, everyone can work hard and can expand and create wealth for everyone. And that really always got me. And I think, you know, to apply that to, like, where the band has been at, if I can succeed in a business way, I can give back more. And so, like, we were able to, what we do now is we charge an extra $5 for our shirt that says Heal Us that we've had for, like, 4 years. And then we take that $5 and we just apply it to different needs that we see.
Right.
And you know, as much as there is the kind of Donald Trump figures who, from what I understand, a lot of the time when Donald says he's going to give, he doesn't. seems to be what journalists are finding, at least. But there are also the Bill and Melinda Gates, you know, who are giving away, like, probably it's going to be Trump almost trillions of dollars by the end of their lives, and people that you know, that do so much good. And my dad modeled that for me, you know, growing up. And so I think I would love to see, obviously, the band grow, because I don't think, because, you know, the Bible, people always say, like, money is the root of all evil, but the verse actually says the love of money is the root of all evil. And so I think, once again, if you see someone as a lover, if you're a money lover, then I think you will commit evil once you get your money. But I think if you're a people lover, then money can be a tool, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you guys are the kings of hustling on tour, getting free stuff everywhere you go. You've told me a couple of your secrets, but...
calling for the free food. Did I tell you the casino trick?
You told me? Yeah, tell the people about the casino trick. I love that story.
So, it's so funny. My mom once, like, saw me when we first started doing this, like, posting Twitter pictures in casinos. And she was like, "Oh my gosh, first, you know, my son's in a punk band and now he's gambling. Like, oh my gosh, like, you know, what a degenerate." And you know, I kind of joke. She's obviously been very supportive. But she, you know, people were asking me, "Why are you in a casino?" So we aren't gambling. What we're doing is hustling. And it's pretty low level, but it really works. It's intended. It's like a life hack that's meant for touring bands. Because if there's a casino, are there casinos where you live in Canada?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I don't know if you know, America's very dependent on the state, and very dependent if it's native territory or not.
Yeah.
But so what we do is we call ahead at the casinos, And we asked them if they have a players club. The reason you call ahead, obviously, is you don't want to waste your time pulling over and getting everyone out of the van only to get rejected. But we asked them if they have a players club. And typically they do. And typically the rewards will either be like five free play or 10 free play. And all you do for a players club is you give them your license, yep. your ID. They yep. swipe you. You're in their system, so you can never join again. We've tried, and they, trust me, they know. Yeah. You'll never join again. And you also got to say, remember to say this, don't put me on your mailing list. Because you see, my address is still my parents' address, and I haven't lived there for a long time.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
moved so much
You're getting
since I was
things
in
from Harrah's and Caesar's. exactly. And, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, I know.
It's like it's already bad enough that I send all of like my business for the band documents to my mom's house. Like, how much worse would it be if she's getting Harrah's stuff? So you say, don't put them on the mailing list. And then a lot of these places let you spin a wheel. And yeah. the wheel will land on like what you get for joining. And so one time we did it and we all struck out and got like free hats and we were pissed. And but we were wearing them, of course. So we're mad wearing the hats that we got for free. Like, it was probably the most first world problem I'll ever say. And then one of our guys spins and he gets 500 free play.
Yeah.
And so the free play is just like a little plastic, like a hotel key card, you know, you insert it into the thing, you put in your PIN, and then it uploads this fictitious point money to the machine. And then whatever you make from there is real. So yeah. you're not gambling any of your own money. And you're just gambling the money that the house gave you. Yeah. And so there's this machine called Queen of the Wild 2. Okay.
I know it. I'm a yeah, gambler, queen... dude. I know it. With okay, the it's got
so
like
queen
the naked
of the Wild 2.
It's got like the naked Amazon chick on it. I know exactly. why you started yes. playing that machine she's the wearing, first time.
Yes, she's wearing not a lot of clothes.
No.
and it's like a leopard or cheetah print, and there's a gorilla nearby. And so that machine, Alex, our drummer, was like just hitting the max butt because obviously we're trying to get out of there. We don't care about gambling. So he was just max betting and he hits the jackpot and got like 30 free spins. And he made like $500 or no, he made $800. And we have a rule. This is very socialist. It's funny. So we went from
yeah.
communist to capitalist and now to socialist. Very socialist, very Canadian, you could say of us. Just kidding.
Sure.
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Sure.
Kind of.
Well, yeah.
We split because it makes it more fun. And it makes it more of a camaraderie thing. So, of course, we all bummed out. But then we ended up all getting like $180 because Alex was kind enough to submit himself to the socialist agenda. So ever since then, it's always been like we do this free play life hack. And everyone strikes out. And then one guy, even me, I one time got lucky and won a few hundred in this place in Philadelphia. But it's amazing. So if you're a DIY tour, yeah. you're a DIY band on tour, you know, you're like us and you call Chick-fil-A's and Chipotle's for free food. This is a great hack. You know, it's like you get free money. A lot of times they have coffee, free coffee.
Oh, yeah. They almost
soda.
Always have free soda and free coffee. And sometimes even they'll have a big discount on food. And sometimes,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, yeah. So for a player, you know, a player's club, like,
oh, yeah.
The food is usually cheaper at
a
casino.
Buffet.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes free buffet. And sometimes it'll be like, oh, half price or 25% off for members. And usually in a casino,
yep.
food is already pretty cheap. So.
Exactly. And yeah. it's like that stuff along with RIFO, which is a really cool housing organization, Rocker Face Off, I think is what they started it for. But it's been around forever. RIFO.org is a group that you join in, like, it's just houses of really nice families across America who are just, you know, a lot of times their kids have gone to college or they just live in a huge house and they let bands crash with them. So it's like, you know, crashing with friends or crashing with RIFO families and
yeah.
doing little silly things. It's definitely what kept us alive because
yeah.
from 2012 to 2015, we you know, no one personally made a single dollar from tour. And the goal was just to, like, make sure that we broke even enough that we could go on the next tour, you know?
No, I remember that too, you know, being a young band and we weren't as savvy as you guys. How does the free food thing work, by the way? I think some people are gonna wonder how that works.
Totally. So the reason I said Chick-fil-A and Chipotle is because typically they're a little more close to the ground as far as, like, you know, there's always a manager there and a lot of times they're able to, like, call shots. A lot of times there's a franchise owner there. And so we just call them and we say, hey, you know, we're a small band from California. We've been out on the road for this many weeks and, you know, especially back then, we're like, hey, like, we don't really know if we're going to have enough money to eat tonight. And that was true, you know. And, like, you know, it's kind of a guilt trip, to be honest. Like those Sarah McLachlan videos where they're showing, like, puppies. And they're like, do you hate puppies? And, like, they're showing puppies. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, take all my money. So we would just kind of give tell them what's up. And, I you know, Chick-fil-A's and Chipotle's were definitely the only two, like, national chains that we found a lot of people were saying yes. And usually it is the South. The Southern hospitality thing's quite real. It's really hard to get free food in the Northeast United States, I find, when you compare it with, like, Oklahoma or Texas. And, you know, that's, I guess, a sociological question for another time. But, yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah, a lot of free food. You just kind of – you just level with them, honestly. And
you play the Christian you play the Christian band card with Chick-fil-A. Does that work?
You know, I would like to be the cool guy on the podcast. He's like, no, we would never use the card. But no, absolutely, yes. We definitely have. I will you know, because I am a Christian, and so I guess I don't feel too bad saying it, but it's like I'll just be like, yeah, like Chick-fil-A's, I think we found sometimes would respond to that because it has, like, I guess some Christian leanings to it or whatever. I think, you know, I mean, each guy, like, if Mitch in our band calls, like, he's not going to say that, you know, but, like, I will.
Right.
Probably. Right. I kind of honestly just depends on it. It was one time someone's, like, sounded really sketched out, and this is, like, probably really lame of me, but I was like, you know, I honestly just got my master's. It was, like, a long time ago. I was like, I got my master's degree last week. I promise, like, I'm not trying to use your chicken for drugs, if that was even possible. You know, I'm like, I'm just trying to, you know, make ends meet and do what I'm passionate about. But it's always interesting, the conversations. But definitely sometimes people yell at you and they're just like, hey, grow up, you know, get a real job. But for the most part, those two organizations are full of really nice people. Recently, dude, we got that free Taco Bell thing, the Feed the Beat.
Oh, yeah.
Where they give you, like, and it's funny because I don't know if you noticed, but when they send it to you, it's $105 cards.
Yeah, we got it before too.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
Yeah, I've had it before. Yeah, we had it. I still have
and
those cards
kicking
around.
They don't have any Canada, do they? Do they have Taco Bell?
We have Taco Bell. It's there's definitely not anywhere near as many as the U.S., but it's pretty prevalent.
Okay.
But I don't know if the cards work in Canada. We have fries at Taco Bell in Canada though.
Oh, that's awesome.
We have fries.
Man, That makes it like the ultimate stoner goes here, right?
You get
there.
A Fry it's Supreme.
Like Taco Bell, like, and they have fries.
Yeah, Fry Supreme with, like, all the stuff that's on not just Supreme, but on fries. It's kind of like a Mexican poutine. It works.
You know, Del Taco is the one that does that in America.
Yeah, more, I love Del Taco.
You know, Del Taco is a very divisive conversation, man. I have found some people just hate it. I think it's incredible because you can get a full meal for like $3.50, which is pretty amazing.
And they've stepped up their game. Like, some of the new stuff they've got, like avocado and, like,
yeah,
you know, it's not your father's Del Taco, you know?
No, it is not. No, it's a edgy Del Taco. But yeah, so I feel like we've talked about the most. This has been like the DIY conversation.
Well, I love that, but I love it about you. And I mean, let's be honest. You guys did win the Underground Band Award at the APMA.
And I was caught pooping. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Did you hear about that?
I was drunk off my ass, dude. I
implore you to watch the video because, like, they have, like, isolated segment videos for each, like, award winner. So I kid you not. So, like, I thought Knox Loose was going to win because that band is, you know, way more popular, at least currently, than we are. You know, they blew up. Like, they're the biggest thing to happen in hardcore music in a really long time. And so, like, that band's massively popular. And, you know, I mean, I think we posted about it once, like, as a band. Hey, we're, you know, I just, we didn't, you know, it's not something that, like, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't something that we thought we would win.
Yeah.
And, you know, all good. So I'm very honored to be on the nomination. I was just stoked when we got nominated because, like, the business part of me thinks, oh, you know, some new people will be exposed to our name, and that's cool. And so we were planning not to go to the award show, and not to be rude, but, like, we're a very boring, basic band. Like, all the guys were, you know, Thomas, like, wanted to fly home and see his wife on the off day. And, like, and so it was we got a message saying, oh, you should really go to this. And we thought, oh, well, maybe. But anyways, I was still pretty sure Knox Loose was going to win because, like, I really think that they deserved it in a lot of ways. And Movements was up for it, too, who, like, that band's blowing up. And they're such a great band, also from Orange County. And so it was – there was all these, you know, different groups up there. And so I they were like, hey, you know, stand out here. They're going to call it in 5 minutes. And so I just went to the bathroom, and I hear someone yelling, where's Garrett? So I kind of pinch it off. And the first person I see is Cam from Beartooth. And Cam's like, you should probably go on stage. You just won an award. And he's like, he's very like matter of fact.
That's
about
totally
it.
Like, him though. Yeah, that's like his personality. I could picture him saying that. That's so funny. Wait, they had you. They had you come down, in case you won. Like all the bands were down there.
They had us stand in the lobby.
But were the other bands there too, or just you guys?
I didn't see other band, but the
yeah, I think that was the clue right there.
That probably should have been, but honestly, I was told that other bands were in other areas, so I think they might have tricked us there. And on top of that, we weren't dressed up. We just weren't, I don't know, it just wasn't really a thing that we thought about. So I went to go take a poop, and, you know, they call it. And so you should really watch the segment on YouTube, because what you see is they announce it, the dude from the gospel choir announced it. They're playing that kind of cheesy repeating guitar riff. It's like, and it goes for a minute. I kid you not. It is really awkward. And then eventually the gospel youth guy's like, Silent Planet, can you please come on stage? And then it keeps going for another minute. And it's just really awkward. Finally, you'll see me sprinting up the aisle, I think. And I'm in my bare feet, and I'm wearing the 100 shorts that I wore for 6 weeks in a row. And it was just very, very silly. And I guess right. it ended up being someone told me however many thousand people voted for us, and Knocked Loose is almost the exact same number. And it was quite close. And it was one of those things where it was you know, it was nice that people voted for it, but I also don't know what best underground band actually means.
I think you're very deserved as the best underground band. I mean, everything we've talked about, you know, is, you know, you guys taking the reins on your own career, doing the merch thing. I don't know anybody that goes to casinos and doesn't just get drunk and, you know, waste their band money, not make band money. So I think
you guys are very, very band money. And my really boring band dad side had a conniption fit.
Sure,
just what people have actually, you know, because I've always, when I see casinos, I literally think oh, it's a little, you know, free drinks and some free money, you know.
Yeah, well, that's true too. Yeah, the drinks is another thing too in certain, not every casino, but most of them.
But yeah, please watch that video. It's very I
definitely will, and I encourage everyone listening to this to check it out.
I have nothing to say in this guitar riff. Oh, that's on a 5-second loop, plays at least 50 times. It is really, really awkward, something out of a Will Ferrell movie. So, yeah.
Well, before I let you go, I want to talk. I know we've been talking for a while, but I want to talk a lot about, you know, your just kind of where you are as a band in your career. I mean, you guys have had your second record. When we talked, I think it had just come out. When we talked, I don't think it had come out. It hadn't come out yet. Yeah, right.
I remember we were about to go on Warped Tour, and you're like, dude, you're going to have an insanely bad time being in a van. And you were right. It was really rough.
Well, then you did it again. So what could have been that bad?
But to be fair, we didn't have AC in 2016, whereas 2017 we had a vehicle that had AC. So that was an upgrade.
Dude, we have to move on. I can't even. I'm having a conniption fit now. Okay. You guys have this record. It's not a sophomore slump. You know, people love this record. You guys are doing really well. You've had a lot of tours, you know, and now you've started to develop a fan base. And I remember the last time we talked, and I didn't, pretty honest with you, you know, I didn't know your band as definitely not nearly as well as I do now.
Yeah.
And you kind of wrote yourself off as not a musician. You said that verbatim. You said you were not a musician. And you guys really seemed like a band that was just sort of like, we don't deserve to be here. Like, we're going to try to take these support tours. We're going to hustle like we do at Chick-fil-A. Now, you guys are a legit band. You guys have fans. You guys you guys did some headlining dates. I want to know
we
how
did.
That was.
Oh, man. It was really fun.
And more importantly, as a person, now you've gone through this. Garrett, you deserve to be there. Like, you're the guy, you deserve to be there. You did before, but now there should be no question in your own mind that you do.
So how's that all been for you transitioning now to you know, just in a year and a half from a baby band to definitely not a baby band anymore?
Man, well, that, first of all, that's really kind of you. And if you're listening to this, it's like, you know, that's Shane from Silverstein saying that. So that's really special to me, seriously. And to all my guys, will hear that.
I'm on my second beer, so there's just, you know, don't believe everything I say.
Yeah, you're like, I get you sober, and you're like, oh yeah, by the way, like, write a better album. But no, it's been really humbling. You know, I do believe, I guess it's my spiritual and belief as a Christian, sola fide, sola gratia. So I believe, you know, I only have, you know, all I have is faith. That's only by grace.
You have faith, and you have your business sense, and you have all the books you've read and all the literature and your education. Yep. Go on. I know, man. I know, but I'll call you out when I have to.
I think for me, you know, it's been this incredible, like, experience kind of trying to develop a community. We were able to do a headliner. We let our listeners pick the songs. That was really fun and a really, like, cool way to try to connect. We got to do a VIP thing that was just more of like a kind of hangout and a Q&A thing, and BD for that. And it was cool to try to be as intentional at a show as we would like to be. Because sometimes when you're on a support tour, you know, you just kind of get your 30-minute set, and, you know, you're really in someone else's show. And so you don't want to take up too much space or make things about you. Whereas on a headlining show, you really get to try to, like, express what makes your band you.
Absolutely. And that was what I was going to ask you, is, you know, now you're able to educate and further your message.
Yeah, it is very, it's been a challenge for sure, because sometimes you're like, oh man, I have so much to say. Then you get a chance and you're like, oh wait, do I really have that much to say? Or, sometimes just running into the finite things of, like, I wanted to do this insane floral backdrop with, like, water recycling through it. And then I just realized, like, yeah, we are not, you know, we are not the biggest band.
We're not quite a day to remember quite yet. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. We can't have our, and so, you know, like, scaling that back and, yeah, ended up building these flower walls that we ended up leaving at the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis. And to this day, they still use them, which is awesome.
Cool,
so kind of worked out. And that's a venue we love. So it was like a little gift to them, I guess. But it was, it's definitely been a process, and it's been humbling. And we have, you know, it's funny, I'm at this merch place that we work with a lot, Absolute Merch. And when I'm home from tour, I don't really have a place that I can call home. So I kind of, like, almost call this office home. It's funny because I talked to a few of the people who do support emails here, and they've said that, like, you know, your listeners, like, stand out. It's just, like, really understanding, nice people. And it's a small thing, but, like, I really do hope that, like, you know, people, like, I've met people, you know, and I know you have too, I'm sure, with Silverstein, who have, like, met their future spouse at one of our shows, or they've just in general, like, found other friends, or they just were, like, at a metal show for the first time, but it wasn't hostile and people weren't trying to prove a point with aggression. And that's really, you know, that's the hope, I guess, is that people can have a genuine experience, and that, yeah, you know, I guess some folks are picking up what we're trying to get. And, you know, they say, like, it's the law of attraction. Maybe we're kind of attracting the folks who really can get into the message that we have of peace and hope, but also, like, I think the difficulty that sometimes when you want to understand things, or when you want to, like, delve into difficult subjects, it's going to require some pain, and it's going to require some, like, self-sacrifice. And it's been really neat meeting people who are willing to get into that and trying to write songs for them. And so, like, I'm writing a song right now about heroin addiction, because I've met so many young people at our shows, especially recently, and especially in the middle of America, who are really fighting for their lives, and they're 20 years old, and they're dependent on a substance that can kill them, you know, at any point.
Yeah.
And so it's like trying to write about that, and so that can be, like, more of a dialogue, because I always, you know, and it's very probably gentrified of me, but I always thought of heroin as, like, something that, I don't know, people, you know, on their really last leg of are into, not someone who, like, looks on the outside like they have their life together, yeah, and is, you know, going through college and has a relationship. Like, people from all walks of life are struggling with that, especially because of how it starts with the pharmaceutical industry.
You know? You're absolutely right. Yeah, I've watched some documentaries about it, and it really is fucked up.
Yeah, but, it's hell. But anyways, that's a dark note.
No, I mean, you know, we're getting a little off track, trying to talk about, your music and stuff. I understand the relationship with your fans is one thing, but, as just yourself, like, how have you changed, in the last year and a half? Isn't it amazing you can be so aware of so many things and not yourself? Isn't that amazing, though?
It kind of is. I think with my music especially, it's been a pretty external in a lot of ways, like a lot of historical stuff or a lot of other people's stories. And I think this album's going to come a little closer to home for me in a few ways. Definitely, I guess transitioning to adulthood, like the gap between being, 24 and you're like doing a lot of touring, now being like 27 and being like an old, being an older dude on like some of these tours, like
Warped Tour. Well, it happens so quick.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you feel like the young new band, and then all of a sudden you feel like the old guy. It's like, when were you average?
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah, I know. I think you guys are probably pretty average right now, but you might feel a little old from
the
wear and tear.
I think we, especially being an American, I'm in a society, and I'm sure Canada's not too different, that idolizes youth. That really, like, youth is the goal, I mean, almost any pop star or pop music, it all circles around, like, I'm youthful, it's young. Mm-hmm. And I think that obviously we're incredibly afraid of death, as a society. And I think it's natural for people to fear death, but I really do think that if you look at anti-aging is like a, billion-trillion-dollar industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like we're afraid of death and anything associated with death. It doesn't even have to be death itself, just anything that looks like aging. And we're so afraid of it. And elderly folks are, kind of quarantined a lot of times into these homes, which South Park recently made an episode about that made them look more like prisons. But, it's like we push the age away. That's actually another thing I'm writing about. And sorry to get off topic, but I guess I'm learning, what it means to be older. And I'm still a single dude. I'm still trying to figure out relationships, and I'm still trying to figure out what home looks like. And I'm trying to be more intentional with my time, because you realize how valuable time is. And, we started making a little bit of money, and so now I'm trying to figure out how to, do the money thing and, not just keep it in a sock in a drawer at my mom's house, so it's, there's a lot of, there's lessons I'm learning, but above all, we're writing a new record and we're recording it really soon. So that's my primary kind of obsession right now, for sure.
And do you think the new record, like, what's your approach? Obviously there's the musical side, there's your, and there's the lyrical side. Are you kind of trying to make a natural progression from the last record, or do you feel like you guys need to consciously change what you're doing?
I think it's a progression for sure. I think, some of the people who were involved in the writing of the album, namely our older guitar player Spencer, aren't a part of it, but still a lot of the core still is, Alex and Thomas and Mitch and myself. And so I think we're going to grow off of what we did previously. It's still going to be a lot of stories, but I think the theme that kind of holds this album together is much more abstract. And because I think the last time we could say, oh, mental illness, mental health, that sums up. And this one's like, if anything, it's just like the existential crisis. It's like, it's about loss. It's about time. It's about space. It's about like the more conceptual framework, because I guess that's like, at first it was history and I was in the past, and then it was mental health, which was very much the present. And now it's kind of, this is like the future album for me almost. Even though sometimes I'll look to the past, and if there's any story that sums it up for me on this album, it's probably the Tower of Babel, which is like, have you heard of the Tower of Babel? It's like an old biblical story in Genesis.
Like you talked about this last time.
I very much might have, because it's Babel. Babel was on my mind a lot, but I didn't really get it out, and it became more about mental illness, but it's like, this idea that, humans are building a tower to get to heaven, And then, God says, come, you know, let us give them language so as to confuse them. And first of all, the let us thing is probably a problem for a lot of monotheists, but there's a lot of things in the Bible that a lot of people who say they believe in the Bible don't want to actually talk about. But there's that. And then, you know, it's like language is a device that divides people. And did you see that movie Arrival?
It came out last year? I did. Yes, I did see that. Yeah.
I mean, that's basically a modern retelling of Babel in a lot of ways.
Oh, interesting.
I think. And because it's like the language was so divisive among all the people groups of this world. You know, one person heard tool, one person heard gift, one person heard weapon, you know, for all the same symbol.
Right.
And but, you know, language really is what defines it. And I've got into the semiotics, and I'm not going to talk your ear off. It's just I've started to read about semiotics and the language of our imaginations. You know, do you think within a language? Does the language that you speak, is that the walls of your imagination? How do you break out of those walls? You know, there's a psychotherapist that I'm heavily, you know, like kind of following after his work right now named Lacan. And he basically believed, as a Freudian, he believed that like a lot of, there is the subconscious, but a lot of what, like the subconscious is where language has not yet reached.
Right.
And so as humans, he's like, you know, we're struggling with the subconscious because it's like the thoughts and the beliefs and these innate desires that like our human language hasn't grasped yet. Because I think you'd be a fool to think like there's a word for everything. I mean, because, you know, we're...
Of course not. No. There's already words in other languages that, like, you know, German especially, I know you're going to be going there, that they have all these words for things that we don't have words for.
Exactly. Schadenfreude. Yeah. You know, the word in German, you know, take pleasure in someone else's pain.
Yeah.
And it's like, and so it's like these, I think that's something I've really been grappling with was like how language sometimes can just be, it can be so limiting. And, and especially, you know, you talk about God, like I believe in God, but every word I speak about God will be limiting. It'll be anthropomorphic. It'll make God into a person. Because if I actually believe that God's the creator of the universe and et cetera, you know, omnipotent and benevolent, then you would imagine that, you know, I'm going to run into problems talking about a being that isn't, I mean, a lot of people say isn't even a being, but talking about like the essence of everything and then just using language like, oh, he, you know.
Right. Well, like, that's the thing, though. The literal nature of language has gotten us into so much trouble, you know. You know, as you know, different religions and societal. I mean, that's where so much comes from, and so much of conflict is misunderstanding.
Yeah.
You know.
And
that's what language is like. You know, it's a way to try to understand each other and try to communicate, but it's not perfect.
It isn't perfect, and I'm just so blown away by the story of Babel. He says, "Let us give them language so as to confuse them." Yeah. And like part of me wants to be like would there be another way to communicate almost, you know? And man, I guess that's some stuff, and you'll hear me yelling angsty about it on our next record.
Yeah. No, I mean this, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. Any idea when it's going to come out?
It'll be next year, and that's like a super cop out, but I honestly...
No, it's not. It's not. It's never easy to know, you know.
Exactly. It could be out, like we're recording it on pretty much the exact same timeline as our previous record, so it could come out in the summer. It's possible. But it's also very possible that you know, like a lot of bands, we'll probably maybe wait till we have like a tour that really feels like the right time to put it out. And the exciting thing is this time being, you know, maybe we can actually be headlining when we're doing it, you know, and so that we can really flesh out the album in like a creative way and give people who are at those shows like a unique understanding of what the album's about, you know.
No,
so that's the goal. That's the goal. But that sounds very artsy and pretentious. So.
No, it's okay. So, and you're heading back to Europe with Stick to Your Guns very soon.
In 8 hours, and 10 hours.
Oh, wow. Damn, really soon. Okay, cool. Yeah, dude, go get some Del Taco on the way home or something, man.
Oh, dude, I already have this authentic Mexican food. I have this pizza. Yeah, it's all here.
What are you looking forward most to on that tour? What's your takeaway going to be? I mean, I know it's not your first time there.
You know,
but,
I'm going to sound like
you're probably getting more and more comfortable being there.
You know, yeah, it's funny though because we still we haven't. I don't think we have much of a following in Europe. I will say, Stick to Your Guns has. I don't know if you know this, but they were always popular in Europe for sure.
Yeah, I
but
know they do
just,
well.
They just hit a critical mass, dude. They're selling out like 2,000 cap rooms.
Yeah,
and so like this tour, we're very, very, very fortunate to be on it. Very thankful to, you know, the Stick to Your Guns dudes for taking us out on it. Because on top of that, Being as an Ocean's on that too. And
yeah, no, it's a great tour. I was very impressed when I saw the I was actually at in Wiesbaden, like just hanging out outside. Yeah, I don't know if you know that it's cool. I like Wiesbaden, and they have like this kind of complex with the two venues and the train stations there. And I saw your the poster for Stig, and I was like, oh shit. And then I looked at the bands and I was like, oh my God, this tour is amazing. So I was very impressed.
Dude, it's funny. And you're going out to England, to the UK with the Boys in Hail the Sun.
Yeah.
Like our best friends. They were the direct support band on our headliner. And they were they're my band's favorite band. So like them and the Contortionist probably. Like
cool.
and so when we saw them on Warped Tour in 2016, we were like, our agent said, hey, do you want a headline next year? We're like, yeah, only if Hail the Sun's down to like, you know, right. to support it. Because just watching a band that you like are obsessed with every night. I mean, you know how that is.
Sure.
Who's that for you? What's a tour that you've done where you were like more excited maybe to watch the band on the tour play than your own set?
That's a great question. I don't know. Most of the time, I mean, my favorite band ever is this band called Grade from our hometown. And anytime we've done shows with them, it's always been like more about them than our show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember when we did some shows with Let Live.
Let Live
just like they blew my mind every night. Like I was
amazing.
Like, and another band is The Chariot. The Chariot, I had to watch them every day. Like,
so are you stoked on the fever?
I haven't actually like heard it yet. I was talking to Jason. I was trying to get him back. I think we're going to do another episode at some point. But it's cool that they're doing it. And Stevis from The Chariot is my dude. So yeah, there you go. The Chariot and Let Live.
You know,
so that's going to be my favorite band ever.
I actually got to see their first like venue show at the Roxy.
Oh, cool.
Like a couple months ago. Yeah. Donovan actually from Hail the Sun just like hit me up. He said, I have an extra ticket. And it was like so nice of him. Because the tickets, I don't know if you know, they were $333, because like 333 is a big part of their imagery. So the tickets were $333 at the Roxy, and they sold it out, and it was nuts. And half the people there were like label A&Rs who were like trying to figure them out.
Right. Yeah. And like Travis, but every time I see their posts on Instagram, I see like Travis Barker's like commenting and stuff. So I'm like, okay, this is going to be like,
oh, yeah.
I'm like, is this going to be the next Rage Against the Machine? You know what I mean? The hype is definitely real.
I could see it, honestly. It feels like Rage Against the Machine, but with more like intentional hip-hop kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And also more like, because obviously Jason's so diverse vocally, like some real like, you know, potentially like rock hit choruses.
Yeah.
So, you know, has the versatility and kind of, you know, could do that. I have one question for you before we go.
Sure, man.
Australia.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go to Australia so badly. What is, and I'm not putting you on the spot here and making you take our band to Australia, but I am asking you, how are we going to get to Australia?
Dude.
And if you're Australian, hi.
Hi, Australians, yes. I mean, I would love to have you guys. We're actually planning a tour very soon, and it's going to be announced, and I don't know if we have a support band. So maybe I need to off the record talk to you.
How funny would that be? But no, I promise I'm not trying to put you on the
spot.
No.
Let me finish. It's a really good tour. And I mean, if you guys wanted to come, I mean, if you guys can hustle your way, I don't think they have Chick-fil-A or Chipotle in Australia, but, I don't think it would be that hard for you guys to go. I mean, I know you guys have played fucking China before. So I'm surprised you guys are having trouble getting down to Australia. Like there's a lot of great promoters and a lot of great stuff happening, and I think you guys would do fine down there, like probably really well down there.
Well, you know, you'll hear it on this podcast probably only. I made an Instagram post the other day saying we're going to Australia next year. And the truth is I don't have a tour lined up. That was just me sort of like throwing the ball ahead of myself, and now I got to go chase it.
Right.
So I'm like, that's like, I want to go there. I want to go back to Asia because it will have been a while. I want, you know, like South Korea, Philippines. Like, I mean, there's so many cool spots that would be amazing to play.
Well, man, I don't think it'll be that difficult for you guys to do it. And I think your band is on the up and up. And dude, thanks for taking the time. And
dude, of course, thanks for having me.
Have the best time in Europe on a great tour. And I think, like, this is the kind of tour you guys need. And yeah, I can't wait to hear LP number 3. I'm excited.
Really, really appreciate it. Your recent album is incredible.
Thank you, man.
Really, yeah. So, thank you.
Well, dude, I'll let you go. Get some rest. And yeah, all the best, Garrett.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Cheers, dude.
Bye.
So there it is with Garrett, one of the best. So entertaining and entertaining, but so thought-provoking at the same time, which is why I love talking to him. And thank you so much, Garrett, for coming back on the show. Again, if you're in Europe right now, you got a few more days to catch them. If you're German, if you're Austrian, if you're Swiss, they're coming. I think they're in Stuttgart tonight. And it's a band you got to see on a great tour. So go see Silent Planet. Go pick up their merch. Buy their records. Support them because they are incredible. And don't think about calling Chick-fil-A with your buddies and tell them you're in a band, okay? That's bad, 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 bad. Don't do that. Do not do that. Next week, we will be back with another episode, another doozy, another great one, and one I know you guys are not going to want to miss. So make sure you're subscribed, whatever you're listening to this on. Maybe it's your phone, maybe it's your computer. I don't know. I don't know, however you listen to it. There's a subscribe button somewhere. So click it so that you keep it coming all the time. Also, remember to support me. Check out the All Access Club. It really is the best way to help out. And also, if you like the show, feel free to write a review on iTunes as well, preferably 5 stars. All right, I'm going to leave you with the tune, as always. Their whole record is great, but I'm going to go with this one, their last single they released, Understanding Love is Loss. Here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week.
Searching for solace in a dark and divine.